Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring, boring, boring.
Okay, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
Mookie Betts.
Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball is
baseball.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring.
Simone, Episode 7, presented by Baseball Isn't Boring. I'm your host, Courtney Finnicum, and I am honored to have back on the podcast none other than the great Terry Francona. Terry, how are you? So good to see you.
Thanks, Courtney. It's nice to see you, too. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
I mean, I did promise the last time you were on that we would have you on again to talk about the progress of the league, what's going on with Cleveland, and there's a lot to talk about, so I'm excited to have you on. But first, I have to ask, how is your health? How are you doing overall?
Well, I appreciate you asking. You know what? I'm doing fine. I'm actually like, you know, a year removed from any surgeries, which is always a good thing. And, you know, being away from the game, you know, I was able to kind of, you know, watch my diet a little. Things that you don't do when you're kind of going 24/7. I had lost some much needed weight. You know, probably have a ways to go there, but still, it helps you feel better. And I feel good, which is a nice feeling for once, because there was a couple years there where it was kind of hard. You know, it was kind of dragging my leg around, or, you know, worried about my heart. So it feels good to be, I think, trending in the right direction.
No, and that's wonderful to hear. I mean, there was certainly, I remember the baseball world was, because they're so beloved, that everyone was concerned. They wanted you to get back on the mend. They wanted you healthy. So, you know, to start off, to hear that, is that's really wonderful. And I got to say, you know, I'm looking at you, I can tell that you've lost weight. So that's amazing.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that, because I've tried hard, and it's not fun. It's way more fun doing the things that, you know, you do to put weight on than it is to take it off.
Well, and I think people don't realize, too, I mean, when you're working nights the way you were with as a baseball manager, your diet is completely out of control, right? I mean, you're eating at 10:30 at night, even later sometimes, and it is hard to get your arms wrapped around it, but I'm happy to see that you're doing well.
You make a really good point, though. You know, our life is basically backwards. You know, you eat your big meal at midnight sometimes, and, you know, you're either mad and you're eating because you're mad, or you're happy. Yeah, it's just, it's... You know, you get on an airplane and you're bored. It's just, this has been a good year for me, and I, much needed and really enjoyable. I just came back. I went up to Salt Lake City to see one of my very best friends. We played golf for 2 days. Then we went and saw the Arizona football game. Those are things that I've never done.
Right.
In, you know, since high school. So it's kind of nice.
And I love that you said that too. I love that you've taken this year to kind of do normal stuff, right? I mean, that's normal stuff that people do. And, you know, end of September, you're usually in the middle of a playoff hunt, usually getting ready for the playoffs. And now you've actually just had time to leisurely do normal things. And I think that's amazing. That's a really good point.
I got to see my grandkids, you know, like not at the baseball field, you know, at home.
Right. So,
and again, it was a big decision, but I think it was necessary, and I'm glad I did it.
Well, and I'm glad to hear that too, certainly. And we'll get into, you know, maybe what your plans are moving forward now that you've had this year under your belt without baseball. But I want to jump right in, because I've been watching the Cleveland Guardians all year, as I'm sure you have too. And I see, obviously, they've won the AL Central. They've had a hell of a year. What have you watched a lot of Guardians games, first of all? Have you been monitoring them?
Courtney, funny thing. I probably watched more baseball this year than I have in a long, long time. I caught myself before the last couple years watching, like, the team we were going to play.
Yep.
You know, getting ready. Now, I certainly, you know, either listen or watch the Guardians. But I'll also turn the game on, like, I got the baseball package, and I'll look up and I'll see, okay, it's the eighth inning, it's 3-3, you know, good game. And I'll watch the end of it. So I've really enjoyed that. But I've been so proud of the Guardians. I thought they made a really good selection when they chose Stephen Vogt. And irregardless of how they did, I thought he was a good pick.
Yep.
And I think that's proven. They have really played well. And I'm you can't spend 11 years in a place and not get close to people. And there's a lot of those people that are still there, and I'm so happy for them.
And that's true. I mean, you did spend 11 years there, and your footprint is still there. You know, obviously, Stephen Vogt has taken over. He's done a hell of a job. But a lot of those guys that played under you are still there and are still thriving. Now, what have you seen from Stephen Vogt that has really stood out to you?
You know, I felt like I knew him better than I probably did, because he's from the same hometown as Brad Mills, who was my, you know, longtime bench coach.
Right.
And Millsy just loved the guy. I think his personality is very conducive to being successful. You know, I think the best way to say it is he takes what he's doing very seriously, but he doesn't take himself too serious, which is, I think, a good recipe. When you're a manager, you got to put everybody ahead of yourself. Everybody. I think to make it work, because if it's about you, that's probably not going to work real well. So, and I think Stephen has learned that early on. I think his career kind of prepared him for being a manager. You know, he said it. He goes, I was a high pick. He goes, I got released. I played every day. I didn't play. That helps you understand what players are going through.
And I very much agree with that. And the whole thing about him being a catcher too, you know, do you feel like that makes a big difference in propelling your coaching career potentially?
You know, I certainly never caught, but I don't think it's a coincidence that you see a lot of catchers that move on into either coaching or managerial ranks, because they have to look at the game a little different. You know, if you're an outfielder and you're kind of mad at yourself, you know, you can kind of sit out there and, you know, I as a manager, I wish it didn't happen as much, but you know, you don't get as exposed. If you're a catcher and you're not doing both phases of the game, your team is going to get exposed really quickly.
That's an excellent point. Excellent point. So do you feel like the fact that Stephen Vogt came in with, as we like to call it, a lack of experience, not a strong resume of coaching experience, do you now feel like that's maybe a little bit overrated, having all that managerial experience or coaching experience?
That's a great question. And I get asked that a lot, and I think about it a lot. You know, Courtney, the game's changing, as we all know. I think what's happening now, our teams are betting on the person and then hoping that they can play catch up real quick or learn real quick or you know, make adjustments real quick. Like same like with Kevin Cash, you know, when he went down to Tampa, he had been a bullpen coach for 2 years. He was, you know, he just got done playing, but you're betting on the person. And I understand that. I couldn't have done that. The road I took, I mean, I started out in rookie ball as a hitting instructor and went to A ball and double A. And I got to learn, and you make mistakes that aren't in the glare of maybe ESPN or the media. And it was really good for me. I couldn't have done it. There are guys like Stephen Vogt that obviously can do it. I don't think I would have been able to do that.
And that's a really good point, too. I mean, Stephen Vogt was literally pushed right into the spotlight. You know, he's taken over after you. This on paper was going to be a very good Cleveland team, regardless if they won the division or not. They were still going to be in the thick of things. That was always the prediction. So there was already added pressure. And a guy that's never managed, coached, or anything, I mean, that's a good point, too, that you started kind of from the bottom and worked your way up. And Stephen hasn't had that opportunity, but he's obviously, it was a sink or swim situation. And look, I mean, I would think he's going to be the AL manager of the year. Wouldn't you agree?
I think his name has to be, I mean, Matt Cotaro, his name's got to be there too, who also is a good friend of mine. I mean, because, you know, you go from 106 losses to making the playoffs, and, you know, AJ Hinch, nobody was talking about the Tigers. I mean, they were sellers, and all of a sudden here, they, you know, so it'll be interesting. But Stephen Vogt's name has got to be right there in the thick of things, because I give him credit. He was smart enough to bring in guys that he needed, but he kept guys like Carl Willis, Sandy Alomar, who are just, you know, I mean, you can't find better coaches. So I give him credit for not having an ego that's so big that, you know, it's like, you know, oh, I got to have all my guys. He's done a really, really good job.
And that's actually a very good point. The fact that he did keep that core Guardians coaching staff, and he didn't have to think, well, I'm going to wipe the slate clean and bring in a bunch of random guys. He knew he had a good core of guys there, and he kept them. That's a very good point. I actually want to ask you about Sandy Alomar, because I've always liked him. Do you ever see him taking a next step into maybe getting a manager gig?
You know, Courtney, I've talked to Sandy about that a bunch. You know, over the course of the year, when I first got there, Sandy was the bench coach, and we had Brad Mills as the third base coach. And it was just, we were a little miscast. You know, you need somebody as your bench coach that almost knows what you're going to do before you're going to do it. And that wasn't, you know, Sandy, we hadn't been together. I love Sandy.
Yeah.
So I asked Sandy, I said, hey, do you want to coach third? And he said, to be really honest with you, I'd like to coach first. And we sat and talked for a long time, and he kind of gave me his thoughts. And because I think some people look at first base coaches and they're like, well, they stand down there and they grab the equipment, and Sandy had so much input in our running game that it really helped make us better. And he loves doing it. I think there was a time where maybe he had aspirations to be a manager. I think those have kind of passed. I think he just really likes what he's doing.
And how long, I mean, he's been in Cleveland now over 10 years, right? I mean,
he's been there long. He was there, you know, I was there 11 with him, and he was there before me. He's an icon there. And you know what? It should be that way. I mean, he was a really, really good player. And he's just so modest and so humble. And he just, you know what? He's a lot of what's good in this game.
That is a wonderful way to put it. I'm going to make sure Sandy sees this, because that is a really
wonderful thing. No, don't do that, dog. You'll get a big head.
That's true. No, it'll say yes. I'll make sure he doesn't see it now. That is a good point. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, he was part of that 90s, you know, Cleveland core, right? I mean, you know, Robbie Alomar, you know, Omar Vizquel, he was part of that core. And now he is an icon. He's an icon as a coach now. And that's really cool for him. So I do think he's found a good spot there. I mean, you really never hear his name about, you know, rumors about him being a manager anymore. So,
and I think he's kind of put it out there that he's pretty content now doing what he's doing. You know, it's funny. I go back all the way to I think it was 1990. I went down to Puerto Rico to play winter ball, and Sandy's dad was a manager, and Sandy was a young kid coming up through in San Diego, and you know, I think he was blocked by Benito Santiago, and he was trying to, and I was like, man, this kid's going to be good. And so, you know, again, I knew Sandy when he was 20. So then to see him 40 years later and still have the same personality is pretty cool.
That is very cool. That is very, very cool. How far do you see the Guardians going in the playoffs? I mean, we've seen their bullpen as probably the best in the league, right? I mean, that is a shutdown, nasty bullpen. Good luck if you get to the ninth inning, because Class A is going to shut the door, right? So how far do you see this team going in the playoffs potentially?
Well, you know what? And the Diamondbacks proved it last year. You get in, you give yourself a chance. You don't know. You know, again, I've always kind of felt the formula is you have to be good. You got to catch a break or two along the way, and then you got to be good enough to take advantage of that break. Like if you look at all the teams that won, you kind of look back and you probably see a point where it's like, whoa, that could have gone the other way. And it didn't.
Yep.
But like you just said, their bullpen is so good. I mean, they're young kids, you know, Gaddis and Smith, they have just kind of come into their own, and it's like, you know, sometimes you bring guys in and you're like, okay, I hope this guy gets through this inning. These guys are like weapons. Like, you know, their stuff is off the charts, and they compete and they don't back down. I give Carl Willis again. I've been around Carl enough to, it's really hard to find somebody better. Like if you say something bad about him, you're looking. Like you better look in the mirror. Like I've heard him, the first time I heard him talk to the pitchers in spring training, when it was done, I grabbed him and I said, Carl, my God. And he said, why are you getting on me? I said, no. I said, I want to go pitch for you. He just has that way about him that it's folksy, and but it's just it's if you're around him, you know how he lives and dies with those pitchers, and I love that.
Well, and you could see, I mean, in the beginning of the year, Bieber went down, right? Shane Bieber went down. And people were like, ooh, you know, how is Cleveland going to recover from this? And sure enough, they recovered nicely. And, you know, you know as well as I do, the bullpen is huge when it comes to the playoffs. And, you know, if you can get your starters to push through six innings and then give it to the bullpen, that is excellent. That is excellent. And we've seen a lot of parity this year too in baseball. We've not seen a 100 game winner this year. We have a wild card game going on right now as we speak between the Mets and the Braves. I mean, how do you feel about, you know, this third wild card spot? Do you think that's good for baseball? How do you feel about it?
Oh boy. Well, okay. Let's take it step by step. One, I think it's awesome. The Mets and the Braves are playing today. That's so exciting. I mean, I've been a part of that where with Boston that last day of the year where there was like eight scenarios. It didn't necessarily work out very well. But if you're a baseball fan, it's great.
Absolutely.
So I like the idea of teams like the third wild card. I don't need to be making the decisions for the league. I think there's a better way to find the best team in baseball. And by that, you know, they play 162 games and you use all your guys all year. And if you have a weakness, it's going to show.
Absolutely.
When you get to the playoffs, all of a sudden it's day off. If like, you know, the team that has maybe two good starters or two horses and some guys in the bullpen, you can disguise a lot of things, some of your weaknesses, and I don't think you necessarily always find the best team. So I guess what I'm saying is I'd like to see him play more best out of seven.
Okay.
And have way fewer off days. I think then, you know, you're going to see teams have to use their fourth and fifth starters because you don't even see those guys in the series. Right. And I think ultimately you would find the best team and you would see less upsets.
That is actually a very good point. And I want to call that out too, because you have teams now that are not playing until Saturday. I mean, today's Monday. You have teams not playing until Saturday. So a team that's been on a heater like the Tigers, for instance, you know, having all this time off or having any time off is not the best for them, in my opinion. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree. A couple things. One, being able to set up your rotation is huge.
Yeah.
Okay. And that helps. But our game is such a game of rhythm and timing that, man, you have a week, you know, again, we always used to panic when you come back from the All-Star break because the guys have been away for 4 days.
Right.
Well, now a week and, you know, you'll see different teams. They'll come up with stuff. I'm sure the Guardians are going to probably play a sim game and try to make it as realistic as you can, but it's difficult. And I think that's part of the problem. Like the Braves, you know, they played so well last year.
Yep.
And then got eliminated real quick because it was, you know, I think there's a way to make it where you get rewarded, but you still, you play, you don't just sit. I don't think that's conducive to finding the best team.
I very much agree with that. And the day off comments I think is really important because I feel like you are giving teams a disservice by giving all this time off, because just like you said, this is a game of momentum. And I feel like you said, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be sim games, but it's not the same. You know that.
It's not even close
to the same. Yep. So
I agree with you.
Yep. When you're seeing these upsets, like the Dodgers getting eliminated right away last year, I think there's reasons behind that. You know, I think we all know the Dodgers are a very good team. But if the momentum's not on their side right now, it could be a quick elimination. I agree with that.
Go ahead.
No, and a team like the Braves, for instance, that are scratching and clawing and then play the next day, they could go on some crazy roll. I mean, that's the Arizona Diamondbacks last year.
I totally agree. I would just love to see, like you say, best out of seven. Even if some games overlapped in the playoffs, we're so regionalized anyway.
Right.
And and there'd be more games, so it would make up for maybe less of a TV audience for certain games. I just think, again, you're looking to find the best team, and in a you know, we're not football where we play 16 or 17 or 18 games, you know, once a week. We play every day. And you get exposed over a season if you're lacking somewhere. That doesn't always happen in the playoffs because you can hide some things.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. One thing I will say, though, about these wild card teams, at least we're not getting like a 500 team sneaking in there. You know, all these teams, I mean, San Diego has 90 plus wins. You know, the Tigers have fought their way in. I do like that, at least, that these teams, they all whether they are all flawed, certainly, but at least we do have decently strong teams getting into the playoffs, I feel, in these wild card spots, at least.
And you know what, Courtney, I think it's great for fans because it gives more teams, you know, the idea that last month, hey, we're not out of this thing. I mean, the Tigers are a perfect example.
Yep.
But then I think that's why, again, if you had, instead of a best of three, if you had a little bit more baseball to play, I think more teams would be willing to go all in, because it's not you're fighting like crazy for a best out of three and you go home. You know, if it's best of seven, you know, teams might go ahead and make an acquisition at the deadline. Yep. If they're hanging on, just because, you know, you feel like you got a chance.
Well, you know, if and we're going to get into this towards the end, but, you know, maybe the league does need to call you and get some ideas, because you you seem like you have your arms wrapped around this, because I agree. I do think this needs to be tweaked a little bit more, and you make up really good points. So I agree with that.
I tell you what, though, I do think Major League Baseball does a really good job. I mean, all the rule changes have come into effect. I was panicked about it. You know, I was kind of the typical old guy that had done it one way, and I was panicked. But I learned over the years, they don't throw stuff against the wall. They really do a good job. And you know, you're not always going to agree with everything. I mean, you're not really supposed to. But I also think if it's good for the game and if it's good for the fans, we, the people in uniform, need to suck it up sometimes and just make the best of it, because we're trying to better our game. That's the whole idea.
And I really do believe the pitch clock, I don't want to be over the top about this, but it really may have saved baseball from the fans' experience. You know, I truly believe that. And not, I mean, I'm a baseball lifer. I'm a huge baseball fan. I didn't mind watching 3.5 hour games, you know, but I think for the average fan, this 2.5 hour limit that we've kind of been on, I think has really helped.
I do too. I think we became a victim of our own, you know, they wanted entertainment. So they had walk up songs, and things just accumulated over the years, and it got slower and slower and slower. And also, you know, with the lack of contact, you know, and you know, the three true outcomes, whatever, you know, the game was just slowing down. There was less and less action. And I agree with you. The pitch clock is really good. I know there's some controversy about guys getting hurt, or, you know, can they tweak the rule a little bit? They probably can, but it's still got the pace of the game going, and you're seeing more action, which I think is what they're looking for. It's not just to have a fast game. It's to have good action and continuous action.
So, I mean, I know there's a lot of layers to this, but you did touch on it. Do you feel like the pitch clock has contributed to pitchers' injuries a little bit more?
I'm not smart enough to know that. My personal opinion is, and again, I'm saying this with a caveat that I'm not smart enough to, but I think that the way we've evolved in the game, you know, it's all like grip it and rip it.
Yep.
You know, the guys like Greg Maddux that pitched and, you know, picked their spots when to maybe reach back. Now you see guys, man, they're coming out of games after 85 pitches because they're gassed, because every pitch is like the seventh game of the World Series.
That's right.
You know, touch and command is words that you don't hear very often anymore. It's like throw it as hard as you can to the top of the zone and see if the other guy can catch up with it or just rip off a breaking ball. And I think that has a lot to do with guys getting hurt because they're just, I don't know how you can go out and throw, like I said, the seventh game of the World Series, every single pitch and not get hurt.
That is my exact thoughts. And I actually get frustrated when people want to connect the pitch clock to injuries because I feel like, A, there are a lot of layers to it, and I'm not smart enough to know the ins and outs of this. But your theory, I am on board with. I could not agree more with. I mean, that's wear and tear. Your arm's going to blow at some point if that's how you're throwing, 100%.
The one thing, Courtney, I did think with the clock, and I tried to be extremely aware of it, was when guys are having tough innings, you know, we always taught them, hey, step off, gather yourself. Well, you can't do that anymore.
Right.
So you got to kind of get your bullpen maybe up a little quicker because if a guy runs out of game, you know, guy has a 13 pitch at bat, it can ruin a guy's game because you just don't have the ability to slow it down as much as you want.
It's another great point. I agree. I very much agree. Now you mentioned that you had been watching baseball more than you ever have, of course, this year. Do you ever find yourself watching a game? It doesn't have to be the Guardians, but do you ever find yourself watching a game and thinking along with the manager of the game you're watching, thinking about what are they going to do next? You know, do you ever find yourself thinking alongside them?
Well, I think everybody that watches games does that. That's part of the fun of being, you know, a baseball fan. I used to tell Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff all the time, because there were times where I'd sit up with them when I was unable to be in the dugout. And Chris would ask me something. And I'm like, Chris, I'm not in the dugout. When you're in the dugout, you get in such a zone and you know what you're going to do ahead of time. It doesn't always work out.
Right.
But, you know, and so like to say, well, I would have pinch hit here or I would have brought this guy in here. I don't know who's available. I don't know who's hurt. There are so many things to think about. So many times, you know, you'll put a play on maybe first and third defense. You'll put a play on that you don't even think is the best play, but you're trying to protect your catcher because maybe his arm hurts. Or there's so many things that goes into it that people that aren't in the dugout don't know.
That's a very good point. I feel like as a fan, we have to remember that too, that there's so many layers to this and so many moving parts. So that is a very good point. But has there been any manager this year that has stood out to you? You know, it can certainly be Stephen Vogt. We've already touched on him, that you have thought has really stepped up and taken his team to the next level.
Well, and I'm biased because Matt Cotaro, you know, was in Cleveland for a while with us. But anytime you can take 106 losses, because that starts to accumulate into almost a culture, like, you know, man, losing, it's hard to stop losing. And J.J. Piccolo is their president or general manager, whatever it is. And I even told him, because they went out and tried to win. And you don't necessarily see teams doing that as much as maybe 30 years ago. You know, they're trying to make sure the farm system's intact and the organization is healthy, which I totally get. But winning at the major league level is why we're here.
Yep.
And I thought Q and Brian Sweeney is his pitching coach. I thought they did a fabulous job. I like the way they play. Now, having Bobby Witt certainly helps. Salvi had an off the charts year, and you know, his energy is always, you know, as opposing manager, you're always looking at the other guys. And Salvi, I watched for years. He could hit into a double play. He'd run in the dugout. He'd run back out. And he's got a smile on his face and he's trying to get the best out of the pitcher. And I always respected that.
I as watching, you know, the AL Central like I have as well, I've always been mesmerized by Salvi Perez. I mean, just total class act player. I'm thrilled that he's had the year he's had in Kansas City. I'm thrilled they're back in the playoffs. I think that's a great story. And like you said, they spent money this past offseason. I loved that Michael Wacha signing. I really did. I thought that was a nice veteran presence for that pitching staff. And I really, the fact that they went from 106 losses to now being in the playoffs, that is a wonderful story. So I agree with you. And on that same note, I do have to ask you about another AL Central team that has not had the best luck this year in success. And of course, that is the Chicago White Sox, who have now officially broken the all-time loss record, 121 losses. Has not happened since the Mets in 1962. Absolutely unbelievable, unprecedented losing. As a manager, now that you've never obviously dealt with this before, but how would you handle something like that?
Well, you know, my first couple of years in Philly, we weren't very good. I think we lost 97 or 98 games, I don't know, and that seemed like a lot to me. I can't imagine enduring, 120 losses. And you know, because I cut my teeth in the White Sox organization coming up through the minor leagues, I got to know a lot of those guys that are still there. And, you know, I know it's kind of easy and it's kind of fashionable for people to be critical of Jerry Reinsdorf, but you rarely hear people that work for Jerry be critical of him. Like, he is the most loyal, and probably to a fault.
To a fault.
Guy. I'll give you a quick story, and this is kind of Jerry, and this is probably part of why I feel so, I hold him in such high regard. I was the double A manager, and I was going to go to triple A, and I was down in winter ball managing, and Buddy Bell took the job with the Tigers, and all of a sudden, I'm going to be the third base coach. So I'm out throwing batting practice, and this is before cell phones and, you know, all that stuff. And I get a call and they say, hey, you have a important call. You got to come into the office and get it. So I run in off the field. So that took some time. You know, it took, you know, for somebody to come out and get me. And it was Jerry Reinsdorf. It wasn't his secretary. It was Jerry. And he just called to congratulate me on getting my job. So he was on hold for probably 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's him. He's just a nice man. And he wants to win so bad. And I feel for him. And again, I know, you know, people might be rolling their eyes because they don't, you know, I see the things that are written, but I'm telling you, man, he's just, people that work for him, they feel the same way.
And they absolutely do feel the same way. I will say, you know, loyal almost to a fault sometimes, but you know, you will very rarely hear people in that organization say bad things about the organization or about Jerry. But there is a certain culture that has not been put in place with the White Sox yet. You know, I don't see them pulling a Kansas City Royals and spending the necessary money to succeed next year. So, you know, you made a comment about that when you're losing like that, that it becomes sort of a culture almost, and you want to not have that happen. So what do you think the White Sox and Jerry need to do to get out of this horrible rut that they're in?
Courtney, I've told people so often, my biggest fear in the game was, and I've told players this, like in meetings, my biggest fear is you get to August and the games you're playing aren't meaningful. And by meaningful, you know what I mean? Like being, yes. You know, like when you go home at night, you're just devastated because, oh my God, we needed to win that game because now we're a game out of first place. That to me, I don't care how much money you're making as a player. If you're in the middle of August and you're 30 games out, you're miserable. And I don't, it's hard to get around that. That's why I think teams that are in it the last 6 weeks always have an advantage because guys have a tendency of, you know, you're putting the team ahead of yourself because, you know, you got to win. You're moving runners or you'll get a bunt down. You know, you're 30 games out of first place and you're asking somebody to give up an at bat. It doesn't always work the way you want it to.
That is true. Yeah, I just, you know, it's sad because this is Chicago, right? I mean, this is the third largest market in the country. You know, the White Sox are a chartered franchise. You know, this is my great grandparents love the White Sox. So to endure and to deal with this kind of season after losing 101 last year, that's tough. You know, it makes you feel like you're never going to get out of there, like you said. And it just feels like it could be years before they contend again. So I agree that, you know, there are good parts to Jerry, but I also feel like maybe the game has gone past him a little bit as well. That's just my personal thoughts.
And again, I haven't been around him, and nor is it any of my business to ever take judgment on him or them. You know, it's difficult because, you know, when you make trades, and they made some big trades.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so difficult to see kids that are producing in the minor leagues. That next step to the major leagues is so difficult. And it just, it just sometimes if it doesn't work at the beginning, you know, and they get a little overwhelmed, it's hard. It's really hard. And they've got themselves in a predicament. You're right. And it's going to take some doing. And I was reading something that Chris Getz said that some things will be a little quicker than others and some won't. And I thought that was very true.
I agree with that. I agree with that. I can assure you everyone in Chicago is impatient, though. So we'll we will see what the next steps are here. But it's been very frustrating to see a once very proud franchise go through that. It's a shame. And I know it affects the players. You know, everyone wants to dog on the players. I know they don't want to lose 121 games. Who does? But it's been tough all around. So
I think for baseball, when the White Sox are good, I think it's good for baseball because it's such a big market. Like you said, they're one of the original teams. And so, and again, it doesn't mean that they're always going to be bad, but it might take some time and that's hard. You got to make some really tough, good decisions and probably get a few breaks along the way and then get it going again.
Yeah, that's baseball for you, right? You got to get a few breaks along the way. That is for sure. Well, I wanted to definitely finish up by asking you what your next steps are. I mean, you have now officially been out of baseball for a year. You said it's been great for you, but I got to ask, you know, you are a baseball lifer. This is in your blood. I can still see it's in your blood. Are you getting restless at all? Are you ready to maybe think about making another move elsewhere? I mean, what are your thoughts moving forward?
You know, I don't know. And I'm not evading. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how busy I want to be. I think to be a major league manager, you got to be all in to do it the right way. And that's what I was fighting a couple years ago. And I think a lot of it was to do with my health.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I didn't want to shortchange anybody. So that's the conversation I guess I'm having with myself right now is how busy do you want to be? Because I love the game. Like I didn't leave the game because I got fired or because I didn't like it. I just didn't feel like I was doing the job appropriately. I'm trying to figure that out now myself. You know, do I maybe go back to the minor leagues and help out? I don't know. There's things that get me excited. I need to figure that out. And I'm trying to.
And I totally respect. I know you're not evading the question. I know that. But I mean, 162 games, it is a grind. It is a grind. Baseball is a grind. And I feel like there's several teams and several players and managers right now that are just like, oh, I can relax now. It's over. You know, I definitely feel that. But you would be welcomed with open arms if you came back into baseball. In fact, there'd be a fan base right now that would welcome you with open arms here in Chicago if you ever decided to to come back. And there is an opening, by the way, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, no, I follow it because I love it. I mean, and it's like I was telling you earlier, I've actually followed it more.
Right.
Because it's allowed me to, like I say, just enjoy, not try to figure out, okay, well, we're playing this team next. We got it. You know, I watched it for enjoyment purposes and I kind of liked it. I admit, I saw probably more things like base running things that I didn't like that bother me. That's the other thing is I got to be careful because when you're a manager for as long as I was, you want to do things a certain way.
Yep.
And then when it's done differently, it's hard to, you know, you get a little stubborn and it's like, wait a minute, I think the game's got to be played a certain way. And when it's not, it bothers me so much that I got to keep an eye on that.
So you did notice yourself getting a little fired up watching certain games then and watching certain things go on in the field that you were like, okay, I don't love this.
You know, I'm trying not to be the old guy that, you know, I turn into my dad. And I think what I've come to think is I don't mind the celebrating and everything. I really don't. But what bothers me is when it's happening before the play's over.
Mm, yep.
I mean, you see guys running down to first base and they're waving their bat and they're waving their, well, no, they need to be standing on second. Then when you're on second, go ahead and look in the dugout. But, you know, play the game right. And then whatever happens after that, if it's organic I think it's good. I think sometimes when you're looking for too much attention, sometimes you get it.
I like that. And that is absolutely very true. And there's a couple of teams and a couple of players that stick out to me when you say that. So, but I'm not going to call them out, certainly. But I agree with you. I think there is a certain way to play the game. And I think at the end of the day, you have to play the game with respect. And I feel like that needs to be instilled. And I can tell you still have the fire. And I appreciate that. So figure out
how busy
you want to be.
I like the way you said that. I think playing the game with respect is huge. It doesn't mean you don't do everything in your power to win, but there's a respect for the game and the way it's played. And I think that's, you never want to lose that.
I mean, it seems like we're on the same page. So, I mean, anytime, figure out how busy you want to be and we'll have another conversation. Honestly, Terry, it is always a pleasure. It is a joy to have you on my show. It is a joy to talk to you. You're a baseball genius. I love talking to you. If the Guardians win the World Series, I want to have you back on to celebrate.
I would be happy to. And I bet you when you said baseball genius, however many people you have watching this thing, I bet you there's a lot of people laughing or rolling their eyes. But I appreciate you being so complimentary, and I enjoyed talking to you.
I appreciate it as always, Terry. Thanks again.
Bye, Courtney. Take care.